This episode of Off Course is brought to you by Bag Boy. For 75 years, Bag Boy has been at the forefront of pull cart production, challenging what is possible and pursuing various ways of bolstering the walking experience. From the two-wheel wonders of the 60s to the three- and four-wheel carts of today, Bag Boy continues to provide an optimal experience for the walking golfer. Visit www.bagboy.com for more info.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And we are back with a brand new episode of Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and with me this week, once again on the show and live in person with me, is Mr. James Miles, staff writer extraordinaire. You can find him on Twitter at JMN_THP. What is happening, my guy? Welcome to the Command Center in Ohio.
Live in the Dan studio.
Yeah, it's the Command Center.
It's the Dan studio.
We're Dan studio. Full of libations and happiness. We've got history all around us in the walls. We've got a fellow Ohioan listening in, making sure our levels are good. So thank you, Mr. Martin, for your support here in this challenging time.
Challenging.
As we navigate the audio waves of the podcasting experience. What's up, my guy?
Nada, man. It's been a fun couple of days for us.
Right? So James came in. We've got a big event this weekend with Mizuno. It's going to be super fun. However, you decided to generously sneak your way into Ohio for a couple of days of golf at my home course, the Oasis. Mm-hmm. I have a couple important questions for you. Number one, this is your second experience at the Oasis. How are you feeling about it this time through?
Much better. Better company. Better enjoyment.
Is that because we only played with Martin once instead of twice?
I didn't even get a full nine holes out of him, so that's a little disappointing. True. But no, it's good. I'm an Arnie guy. We're both Arnie guys, so getting to play this layout is a fun one. Like, I could see how you would enjoy playing that course every day.
Yeah, and I think everyone out there from THPville, which is what I'm now calling it, they all want to know, what is this? What is the real state of my game? And have I been overblowing this whole I hate gin nonsense?
There's really, really, really good. And then there's some Dan frustrations.
There is some, wow, why is that happening? If that was drawing, it'd be exactly what I wanted.
It's very close. It's close. It's ultra close right now. It's ultra close.
So the one thing that I was super happy about over the last couple of days, and actually we both did it pretty well, is we both putted super well. And that's my version of super well. Anyone out there who plays good golf in their own version of good golf, they have what I consider to be a super good from their experience. Mm-hmm. Whether that's a guy who's used to 40 putts having a 35 putt round, whether that's a guy who's 35 putts having a 30 putt round. I thought that these last 2 days have been fairly spectacular, if I'll say it, with my putting. Is that fair?
That's fair. There were a lot of putts made.
A lot of drain.
A lot of long putts made.
Yeah. So I'm rocking a putter I've had in the bag for quite a while. We've had our moments. I've definitely pursued other options out there. Shout out to, once again, Marty, who definitely needs to continue acquiring and trading off the ones I don't fall in love with. But it's a Scotty Super Rat, and you have a really interesting setup in your bag. It's a Mizuno head with a unique shaft in it.
It's the Mizuno M-Craft 5. It's the one that you've accosted me about on this show and demanded that I play for an entire year, a mallet, mm-hmm. and we agreed that it is a compact player's mallet.
We agreed?
We did. Whether you realized it or not, we agreed it's a compact player's mallet.
Okay. And,
it's got a KBS one-step shaft in it, which has officially gone live for them, I think, finally. I did a homepage review on it for THP. It's unique. There's definitely not anything that looks like it, but it's good. It's a fun setup. I roll it well.
So you say it's a fun setup. Beyond the simple fact that you have a unique shaft in the head, you also have it custom set to you. Mm-hmm. Based on experience you had over, you can give your guys a shout out at Club Champion, I believe in Tulsa.
Oklahoma City. Shout out to Club Champion, Oklahoma City, and Jacob Prentice and his shop and everything that's going on in there. I was struggling for a little while mentally, being comfortable over a putter. So went to Club Champion, on a whim. Like I think I booked the appointment. I think I booked the appointment like an hour and 15 minutes before it was, and it takes me an hour and 10 minutes to get there from my house. So it was a hop in and go, but no, it was good. Got on the SAM lab, went through everything. Turns out I was expecting to play a different shape. I had the perfect shape in the bag, which was funny, but we had to adjust some stuff. So I play 1 degree of loft now on my putter, which is scary to a lot of people, but it's good.
What is the standard right now in loft? It's right around 4 degrees. Isn't it?
3.5 to 4. Yeah. Most of the time you see 3.5 is becoming more and more the norm. You get some companies that get into that 2.5 range, but it's usually 3.5.
So for all those guys out there who are chasing the perfect putter, I feel like, you know, we make some jokes. If we modify the heads, we could do pretty good on most putter heads we get our hands on. There are people out there who believe there is absolutely 100% one putter head that exists in this world, and not even one style, one head that is like the alpha of their putting experience. How much truth do you think that is, and how much do you think people just need to go and spend a little bit of time better understanding, number one, their stroke, and number two, that not everyone delivers the same way? Mm-hmm. So it might be this certain head that you have, you just need to maybe consider a different loft.
Well, I mean, I had a good conversation at Club Champion when I went through that with them, because you've been on SAM before. And if you're on SAM lab with somebody who knows what they're doing, like, you can open up the world to a golfer as far as understanding what your putting stroke does and what it can do, not just what shape should work or whatever else. Cause I mean, in the end, I'm a big believer in, if you look at it and you're comfortable with it, you're probably going to be able to putt with it.
Yeah.
My comment to you today was, I feel like at times I could putt with a brick on the end of a stick. And today was kind of one of those days, but, no, it's, I get that some people think there's one out there. I think people pigeonhole themselves a little bit at times into that instead of opening up and trying some other things. I think some people have found what they should play forever, and they continue to want to try to find a mallet that works. Not directing that comment at our host.
Wow. That is daggers deep. I mean, I love the chase personally. And, you know, it's funny because I did the SAM putt thing, and the experience was basically that I'm perfectly imperfect. my takeaway is that I'm definitely good at that straight back, straight through kind of profile, and I could use a little bit less toe hang than I have. But what we found with the putter I use, that there's unbelievable amount of consistency being slightly wrong is the kind of the takeaway. But for me, for the most part, it works. I don't have any sort of ticks. I'm not like a hot and cold putter. I'm usually, unless I'm experiencing a new course I'm unfamiliar with, or grass that I don't really jive with, whatever Bermuda. It is, Bermuda, we can say that. Yeah. I mean, if I'm at a place that's unfamiliar and I'm not super confident, like if I'm at home, and I think a lot of the guys that I play with can attest to, usually one of the best assets I have is that putter in my bag. Mm-hmm. And that's why I keep coming back to it, even though I do chase that sort of. And we talked about this on the golf course today. It's not so much about wanting or thinking that there's so much more I can get. It's, I want something that's automatic without really trying. It's, you know, that super unrealistic pursuit that I think everyone thinks is plausible, but no one ever finds.
That's the chase, right?
Yeah. It's the fun part is, like, for example, I put your putter in my hand yesterday. You put it in my hand. I made a 2.5 footer. I was like, well, I'll try it again for 15. I made a 15 footer. I'm like, well, there's my new putter. You know, it's fine. but, you know, obviously getting it back in the hands today, it's just like anything else. You know, there's good putts and there's bad putts. And in this case, it's just a really cool setup. But for me, yeah, I mean, I've been chasing. You know, you've seen my basement. You're involved in the things that are in my basement right now. And, you know, it's just fun to chase. And it's one of those things where it's not like this dramatic iron to iron type of thing. At least with a putter, like, navigating your stroke around it's a little bit easier than changing out a driver or wedges or something.
Well, I mean, there's something to be said about being consistent in what you use. But I mean, you know, you're talking to somebody with 60 putters. And that's not exaggeration. Yeah, some of them are like trailer queens, you know, they're the showpieces or whatever. But I think once you know, and this is the part that I think more people could do better with in their putters, is know your length, know your lie angle, know what loft works for you. And then you can experiment with whatever you want. I mean, I've got styles that go from a number nine all the way into just straight center shaft. And as long as the settings are kind of the same, you can make them work.
So you're fighting them. And this was a fun chat we had with the guys over at Edel when they were showcasing their new wedges. It's not so much about that people can't make things work. It's you make these finite changes that are almost invisible to the swing until you don't have it. And then you realize you're navigating away from it.
Yeah.
You know, that's toe hang, I think, in a nutshell.
Toe hang for sure.
You know, you navigate it through your hands, and the better putters out there have the ability to make those adjustments on the fly. But again, it's, wouldn't you rather something that's plug and play, and you limit your perspective and your thought process to, I just need to get it on this line and put a normal stroke on it. And then suddenly magic happens, and you know, every single putt ever goes in, you know, because that's realistic.
As long as it's shiny and new.
Well, as you say that, not only do you have 60 putters at home, you actually ship the putter to my house.
This may be my largest moment of addiction, is this putter I've been waiting on for several months now, and it got done. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to South Carolina. Can you get it to me? And he thought he could overnight it to me. And then I was like, wait, just send it to Ohio. So Dan gets a shipping notification from UPS that something's coming from California. Yeah, that may be the depths of my depravity there. That's pretty bad.
That's pretty funny. But here's the real question, because it's here now.
Am I going to use it?
And I watched you putt extremely well with the Mizuno. I think it's just going to sit there and stare at us. I do think it's going to make it onto the putting green, probably in the bag for the practice rounds. But when push comes to shove, Mizuno's in the bag.
This weekend it's the Mizuno.
Yeah,
that's the way I rolled it today, especially, and yesterday. Like, this weekend it's the Mizuno. But yeah, I got to tinker with it, right?
I think you do. And it's not staying here because there's rust on it. We can't have that in Casa de Canada, and it's unacceptable, personally, from my perspective. But I do want to talk more about the whole travel golf discussion. It's been a weird couple of years. You know, we've had this chat a little bit while you've been here, and how challenging it is to kind of keep things local. And you know, for us and the THP community, we've both been on there for over a decade, making friends from all around the world, specifically the United States, but also around the world. And it almost felt like I took that stuff for granted, and I didn't really feel that until you got here and we started playing some golf together. And it reminds you, like, I have these friends who have been, you know, a big part of my life, and I haven't had the ability to just go out and mess around and golf and have a great time. And then you show up and remind me of what I've been missing out on. So thanks a lot for that. But do you have that sort of sense of feeling that, you know, there are opportunities out there for golfers that are super unique to everywhere else, and we have a chance to go and kind of play wherever we want to and experience those new things, but it also adds this entire new dimension to the game?
I think so. And I mean, everybody's got their thing. There's always going to be those guys that just want to stay on their course forever, and that's what it is. But I for me, travel golf is, I got to a point in my game where I felt like I could go travel and could go places and see things and go with people. And yeah, THP was a big part of that, but that opened up a whole bunch of doors, not just for like getting to go places I wanted to play. Like, you and I got to play Bay Hill together, which as Arnie disciples and lovers and whatever else it goes with it, because Arnie is the king.
Mm-hmm.
That was like, that was it. Like, that was a moment in golf for me. Yeah. And that's the travel aspect for me, is because the people get involved too. Like, I don't know. The last year has been a bummer. And I told you that, like, I was on my flights in, as I told my wife, yeah, I'm going to play golf in South Carolina, but I'm flying to Ohio, which went over well. but on my flights in, that's what I was thinking about. Like, all the places that we've gone and the things that we've done over the last several years. And it's wild. And to not have that for a year and a half or whatever it is, it's been, I don't know. Like, you get into a groove of things and you forget what it is. And travel golf's always been a big, big thing for me.
So on the podcast over the last couple months, I've had some pretty special guests on, and I don't think there's been too many of them and have not tormented me about going to play some courses I've effectively been dodging. So Bandon's a big one, and you won't stop talking about Bandon. Never. I know you won't. I guess they're adding a sixth course now, which is pretty sick. Straits.
Straits.
Both very windy places that are terrifying
to me.
Oh, come
on.
we talked a little bit about Stream Song.
Yeah.
Apparently that's a pretty cool setup.
A lot of people talk about Stream Song, yeah.
Where else in your head is like a must do over the next decade?
I want to play Bethpage.
Okay.
I want to play the Black Horse.
Mm-hmm.
Just to say I did.
Just to say.
I mean, that's one of those. Like,
yeah, okay.
I mean, Sawgrass. Sawgrass has always been one for me that has stuck out. I mean, gosh, almost anywhere through the Carolinas with so many courses that are there. I mean,
Pinehurst, I'm assuming.
Pinehurst. I think Pinehurst would be a fantastic, like,
maybe
guys trip, stay. Everything that I see with all that place is pretty special. I mean, we're going to a pretty special place.
Yeah, we are. What about chasing the trail a little bit? We did some stuff in our RTJ.
We got to play a little bit of the trail. Yeah. I'd like to see more of it. That's another one that
I think I got to take two swings over an entire weekend, which is the worst experience I've ever had of watching. I don't know how I came home alive from that one, because I was basically, you know, hyperventilating watching everyone else hit. But yeah, that was a cool spot.
That was neat.
Par three course. And it kind of goes full circle, because our first meeting in person together was at a place with a par three course. It was the Omni Champions Gate in Florida. By the way, anyone out there who's listening, if you ever have a chance to play night golf, it is the coolest thing.
Yep.
Absolutely the coolest thing. They had a par three there in which you accosted a green or a pin.
I ripped a cup out of the green.
Yeah. It was very emotional time. Bear hugs for all. But that's kind of full circle in this discussion about the travel golf, but mostly about being able to play with old friends.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's getting close to almost a decade ago when that occurred. And we have, you know, stories to tell between that. But you know, it's this association with golf that has created that sort of opportunity. The big one coming up for us is that we're going tomorrow. We're getting in the car. I guess for everyone listening out there, it'll be yesterday.
Yeah.
But for us, it's tomorrow. It's Thursday. We're traveling to Pawleys Island, South Carolina, a little bit south of Myrtle, to a place called True Blue in Caledonia, a place that is very special in THP history.
Absolutely.
Lots of super cool events already held there. This one is sponsored by Mizuno and THP. We're going to get some new drivers. We're going to get some new wedges. Looking at some irons later on, it sounds like. But we also have a lot of golf to play. And these courses have huge personal meaning, at least for me. What are they like for you?
Oh, there's an emotional tie to it. I mean, for me, it was watching others play on it and then to finally get to go play on them and all the stories that are there. And I mean, I've played with some good friends, some people that aren't friends anymore, and others that I've maintained, and it's good. I'm very, very excited to... Is it 7 years since the last time
so
I played?
Yeah, so we were 2014 is when we were there together. What I think is super interesting, because we obviously go off and do our own thing and whatever. Courses stay there. Yep. They change. The experience maybe changes a little bit. What is your expectation from a number one, a course condition, but the overall experience? Because after 7 years, you've built it up in your head.
It's true. And seen and played other places and all this other stuff with it. The layouts are going to be what they always were. And I think that's the biggest thing in my mind. Like, I know there's not been any massive renovations or anything that's undergone with them. So the shapes and the holes that I remember and the way that the courses flow that's what I always remember about a place that I go to. I mean, that's why I like the Oasis so much. I told you that today on a couple of the holes. It's the way that it flows. It's not a Jack Nicklaus design.
Yeah.
Can I say that?
Yeah, whatever.
I can say that. Okay.
He can come on and argue if he wants. I feel the same way.
No, but I'm curious to see. I mean, upkeep is whatever. That goes with the seasons. With this last winter that most of the United States had and some of the late freezes and everything that went on with it, like, there's a lot of places where I'm from. Their courses got hit hard. So that's an expectation that kind of things could happen with maintenance, but.
So Myrtle's an interesting spot.
It is.
It's definitely not as, I'd say, static as some of these places. It seems to be, that's one of those areas where you either invest in your winter golf or you don't. And then it's pure recovery from that point. And And I've had a guy's trip that with my dad, I actually, stole into that experience with all of his buddies, which was awesome, which kind of died off because of all the stuff. And obviously things change in lives, but every year we'd go down as Myrtle was coming out of the winter and we'd play a bunch of golf courses in the area. And it's always terrifying to, we had a great deal going. It was never like, $100 for an experience that was just terrible. It was always like $30 to $45. You played some turds, you played some great golf course, and you could tell course to course who put the effort in. You know, you'd have places like River's Edge, Palmer course down there, of course, that is phenomenal. You had a place, was it Carolina Nationals, a Freddie Couples course down there, which for, I would say, a good 5 years was one of the best in the area. And then you could tell they just didn't put that effort in the off season. So everything had firmed up and, died off and was slowly growing back. A place, one of my favorites, Crow Creek down there, they definitely put the effort in. And it's usually one of the most lavish courses in the area for the price that you pay. Without going to the big boy courses, which, is not the, was not the, the guys that I went with. That's not really their MO. But it is always fun to go back to those places year over year and see how much they change, especially the ones that you're super fond of. So for me, it's River's Edge, the Palmer course. That's the premium for me. Unbelievable spot sitting on the marsh, but you never know what you're going to get. And you just hope that their emotional ties or their investment into their course is sort of comparable to your perspective.
What's in your head. Yeah.
And I am so excited to see how True Blue and Caledonia look. They're always out on social, which is super fun. They have some engagement out there. They're posting up some pictures and it looks incredible.
Yeah.
I've seen some commentary recently about the guys who have gone there and played and said it's in great shape. My expectation, it's going to be phenomenal. But they're also two very different golf courses.
Totally different.
I prefer True Blue.
Same.
I know a lot of people say the entryway to Caledonia is, I mean, there's one, Magnolia Lane, that no one's going to argue with. But from that area, it's hard to find a better approach than Caledonia.
It's special.
Yeah. So let's go to Caledonia for lunch and then go back to True Blue and play. but yeah, they're totally different. Like True Blue is you are playing a chess game with yourself, basically. You make the mistake and the course lets you do it. And then it's pure recovery from there. Whereas Caledonia, you hit it where it wants you to, if you're lucky. And if you don't, you're working hard. But I've always been a True Blue guy. It's interesting you say you are as well, because most people I talk to, they say Caledonia 100%.
I think it's emotional ties for me.
Yeah.
Like whenever I got to go down and play and everything that we were in, I don't know. I enjoyed the moments on that course probably more at times. So I think it sticks in my head more. I don't know. It's funny the way that we work in that way and the way that we remember things. That's why, 7 years later, I'm really curious to see if what I remember is what I remember, because you played it more than I have. You played both of them more than I have. So there's more built on that. I mean, for me, it was, I can't remember how many holes we played, but there was incomplete practice rounds. And then if your team got their brakes beat off of them, like I did, then you didn't get the whole round. And I mean, so it's going to be fun, especially the practice rounds. I'm super pumped about the practice rounds to get to go play them all in their entirety.
And just your own version.
Yeah.
Of
and
it,
just see playing it what low key. Just see what it is.
Because that's, I suppose, the difference is you build up a lot of pressure on yourself when you go in these events, because obviously you want to win. Everyone wants to win. But with the practice round, I mean, there's no pressure on you. You're experiencing the course in your own version, your own way. That definitely changes some things.
Yeah.
And I don't remember how much practice I played the last time I was down there. It might have mostly been like a 9-hole thing and then straight in the comp. So this time around, it's going to be weird because it's just pure chill.
I mean, it's 36 holes of laughs and fun and whatever else. And
so I have a really challenging question for you.
Oh.
Because you are, of all things, a man who wears his emotions way out on his sleeve. Like they dangle there aggressively. And people know that, right? Fair?
I feel attacked.
Fair?
Fair.
Okay. So I know that you build things up really aggressively for yourself. You want to do well. You don't. It hits you hard when it happens. There's one thing that you do that seems to save you, and it did today. And it's that second nine libation. So I'm going to challenge you. So actually, Mr. Martin was our savior yesterday. He showed up with a couple of Millers for you.
He did. He did.
It was Yingling today that saved you.
It was Yingers today.
So when you're at home, because you play a lot of golf throughout the year, are you a beverage guy?
Nope.
Not at all.
Not at all.
So this is more of like a travel thing, and it's part of the buildup. Or how does that work for you? What changes your mindset to say, when I'm away, I'm more inclined to experience golf in this way?
When I'm away, it's almost like vacation for me. Mm-hmm. That's the way in my head it is. And yeah, the competition aspect is always going to bring out something as far as wanting to excel and knowing what you're capable and what you're not. I mean, that's why at home I've got 140 some rounds this year. So those rounds though are it's golf.
Yeah.
Like for me in my head, it's two totally different things. Yeah. Like there's daily golf, and then there's whenever I get to go and I'm away, and it's not like escaping your family or anything like that, but it's your time.
Yeah.
Especially if it's your time with people that you actually enjoy being around and friends and whatever else and emotional ties to places. So it's like slow down and enjoy it. And I will not lie, after the last year that we've had, it's like slow down and enjoy everything you can.
It's hard, yeah. And that's, you know, I've never really been overly quiet about it on THP, but I don't really say much about it on social, but I've dealt with exceptional levels of anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I build things up incredibly aggressively in my head before traveling. And frankly, you being here was amazing because I did that 2 days ago. So now I'm like super chill. So when we hop in the car tomorrow, it's no big deal, which is awesome. But I feel that way, that buildup, that emotional roller coaster you get when you prep your brain, like I'm going to go do something awesome. I'm going to go see this person I haven't seen. I'm going to go play this golf course I haven't played. And you build so much of that pressure up. And golf is not the kind of sport that works for that.
I mean,
you grew up in a football background.
Yep, football and wrestling.
I grew up in a hockey background. And in, I don't know about wrestling, but in football, when you, for lack of a better word, F up, you go and you sort it out.
Yeah.
In hockey, you lose the puck, you go get it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how aggressive you need to be to do it, you go do it. In golf, you screw up, the last thing you want to do is get aggressive. It's like, all right, let's go the other way.
Well,
here.
I mean, you and I had that conversation today. Like early on, it was rough. And then finally, it's like, okay, here's, and me coaching golf has helped with that. And to snap into it, it's like, here's what you can do. So do that, and just get around, and then you find your comfort, and because tension in this game, and stress, and pressure, and everything else, it ain't for everybody. It's not for me.
So that over the last, I don't know what I was like when we first played. I don't remember.
Horrible. Oh, sorry. It was a rhetorical question.
Wow. Okay. That's the end of the show, folks. I hope you enjoyed. I gotta go and kick him out of my house. So when we first played, like early on, before I really got involved with the online golf stuff and the experience like that, THP, I was a pretty intense guy when I played golf. Mm-hmm. I played golf like I played hockey.
Yeah.
You go and you figure it out. You do bad, you fix it. And then I got a little bit more casual over the years. And that was relatively easy for me to do because I was playing at a level that my expectations were matching. So it's like you can cost yourself a stroke or two around being casual about it, but don't ever be bad. and I'm not saying I'm bad. And I catch a lot of heat for that, for making comments about the soft cap I'm dealing with right now with gin. It's not the point. That's never been the point for me. I know guys are messing with me and it's intended to be entertaining to me as well. But the perspective is we all have different levels that we play to and we expect to play to. And this year has been exceptionally challenging for me from a mental aspect. I think there's really only one guy who gets me wound up anymore, and it's my dad. So I'm assuming he's listening right now. We played last weekend, and there's just those little jabs he says right after.
Just a little needle, right?
It's something about what he says. Like, it's so hard to explain it, but for some reason, the guy who raised me, if he makes one of those little comments, like tries to tell me what I did wrong, or it says it went in the heather or something like that, like I'm just ready to snap at that point. I'm like, who am I? I don't even recognize this person. But yeah, like that, this year has been the most challenging to maintain that sort of relaxed perspective of the game of golf. And I hope that if experiences like this, and when we go and play and we go and have fun down at Tribune Caledonia, mm-hmm. that it kind of carries over and I don't put that insane stressor on myself. I want to circle that back to you a little bit, because I know you play a lot of golf at home and I know that experience is different. Do you look at events like this as a boost? Do you look at it as a potential disaster if you play bad, it hurts you. If you play good, it elates you.
I'm at this point in my life, and the coaching thing has been a part of that. Like for me, I, in the moment of it, I will be upset with myself, especially when you know what you're doing and you can't stop yourself from doing it is the absolute worst.
My driver.
but in the end, it's like, it's golf. Like
yeah.
To me, in my mind, golf is not easy. Playing really good golf is definitely not easy. And we all have different levels of what is considered good golf. And that's why you take a lot of crap from people. But
like, no, me?
But it's the same thing as like I've got kids. I've got one kid who's exceptional and he'll go out on a bad day and in a bad day and he'll shoot 74 and he's livid. I mean, he's hyper competitive right now in super competitive golf, right? And I've got my other kid who's like happy to shoot 85 and he's like, well, what the hell's wrong with him?
yeah.
And I have to explain to him like it's a different level of. And I think it's the same way with it. That's not for me. I expect to play consistent. I know I can score. I know I can also have blowups. And when I go to these things, it's kind of I accept that it's going to be what it's going to be. For years, I put way too much pressure on things.
yeah.
And for sure. And the tension building into it was just too much. So now it's like, go slap it around and have fun and make sure those that I'm around have a great time for and have memories, because that's the things that I was lucky when I first started traveling for golf, I was around people who made that a thing. There was always people that emphasized have fun.
Mm-hmm.
Look where you're at. Stop. And that's going to be my big thing this weekend is like, stop and look where you're at.
Yeah.
Like, dude, you're on a trip.
Especially after the last year.
Just look where you're at. Like the golf is what it is. That doesn't mean I don't want to play good, but it's a big moment of levity, I think.
So is that where that like second nine savior comes in?
Oh yeah.
You know, if things aren't going your way, like let's get a little bit of the happy juice into me hit some music.
I think you take your mind off of anything and it's like, okay, it's a reset, mm-hmm. and that's not a good reset to have. If that's what it is.
Well,
but I don't do that all the time. Like, it's like we've already established, my wife, who's probably listening, no, during the weekdays, I don't have a bad nine and then go. Yeah. But no, it's a
couple pops before.
Don't worry about me.
Yeah.
No, it's good. Like, I think it's a good for me to remember, hey, I'm at a place where I can do this now.
Yeah.
I'm not having to go pick up kids. I'm not having to go coach practice. I'm not having to do whatever. I'm on a trip for me.
Mm-hmm.
So chill the crap out.
Yeah, that's a hard ask, though, because, you know, everyone wants to be competitive. Everyone wants to. And I think that's the challenge and why I've been such a vocal pain in that. But about this whole gin thing, because everyone wants to play to their number.
Yeah.
And
when you're not getting what your number actually is, it's hard to play to your number.
First of all, I'm embarrassed at the fact that I, to the point where I paid money to improve, which I never do. I've been embarrassed to not be able to navigate away from this sort of swing challenge I've been facing. Mm-hmm. And I'm very critical of people who don't post the scores they should, whether that is a sandbagging aspect or whether that is a vanity aspect. I joke with guys who carry caps but don't play anything that I don't care what you do. If you want that 40-foot putt because you are feeling like a bogey on this hole instead of a double, that's fine. It makes no difference to me. But you know, once you get into these events, that number is your baseline, and the goal is to be equitable to other people. And when that becomes a challenge or gets challenged, I think that is, I don't want to say demeaning that because that's way off. It is mentally fatiguing to know that, and it already feels that way because, you know, there's video out there of me hitting good shots on YouTube where people make the robot comments and stuff like that. I know there's like a threshold that I'm expected to hit. And so that's been my buildup, right? And to have a governing body like the USGA basically say, the more honest you are, the more punished you get, is been a very problematic thing for me. To the point where I asked my head pro to reach out and pursue an adjustment. The local chapter said that my committee could make that adjustment. I found out there's 25 guys at my golf course right now who are soft capped, which is unbelievable. And I hate the fact that their response to that was business as usual. We play to the letter of the law, no change. First of all, I don't play in events because I know who carries what handicaps into those events. And yes, mm-hmm. I'm calling those guys out because mm-hmm. I watch those numbers. Even if I was a 3 right now, I wouldn't compete with the net 65s that show up. That's just not realistic. So that already is like my throwaway. But it is infuriating to think that someone makes 3 or 4 insanely good rounds for their ability and has to drag that handicap through a winter and then come out in the spring
and expect to play
and
to
get punished. First of all, expect to get play to that and then get punished when they obviously with a kid and a family and a job at home are not going to play to that number. And yes, I'm ranting again because it's foolish, man. Like the number was plus 3.3. That is not a sustainable number for anyone who doesn't hit the range 4 to 5 times a week, you know, and has a swing coach. And I knew that. But I posted those scores knowing that because that's what I shot.
Yeah.
And then circling back into this year, all my rounds have been in mid 70s, upper 70s, lower 70s, somewhere in that range. I think I shot a couple 75s while you were here.
Yeah.
It's expected. And for that to say, well, you need to level off before that changes. I'm pretty friggin' level right now.
It's feeling level.
I have like 4 really dumb shots around and everything else is pretty good. So yeah, I mean, that was a really long rant and I needed to get that off my chest, and I hate that I'm using my podcast as a way to do it, but that is awful that a government body is so focused on the guys who suck the fun out of this game by being dishonest that they damage the folks who are truly being honest.
Well, and I think any reaction the USGA has been that way. Like, you know, for me, one of the big issues is like whenever I play, a lot of times I don't have anybody I'm playing with.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the USGA says that's a no-no.
Yeah.
Right. So you either lie.
Yeah.
And you fudge it, which whatever, or you go by the letter of it. And well, you can't really carry a handicap anymore because you have to play the majority of rounds by yourself.
Right.
Like, so we're trying to stop people who are going to find a way to screw other people over no matter what. Cause let's be real. Those guys are going to find a way.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. So instead, we cut off our nose to spite our face and trying to make people do things and trying to fix things. And then whenever somebody brings up a point about it, it's like, well, that's the way we've always done it. Yeah. Well, maybe that needs to change. You and I have had that conversation this weekend, right? People that do things the same way because that's the way they've always done them. That's just stupid.
It's awful. I hate that. This is such a statistical thing that you can't be treated as a human being. It's always, you're just a part of the statistic about it. But I also said, as I was talking, rather aggressively to my poor assistant pro who took the brunt of my frustration. And, you know, I appreciated him for not getting mad because I think he does understand the challenges of what the number represents. You know, I just said to him, like, I've never been more encouraged to cheat in my life. And that's the weird part is that if I shoot a 75 this week, I'm encouraged to post a 78 to double my score to par.
Get a level off.
In order to get the actual handicap number that actually played.
I totally
and
get
he's
it.
He's sitting there, you know, he kind of wants to laugh about it. But at the same time, I also know that, number one, there's nothing he can do about it. And number two, no matter what I say, I'm not going to be happy. What he says, I'm not going to be happy. So yeah, the saga continues, man. I'm a 1.1 that I should be a 2.5 now. And don't get me wrong. My preference here is to get better. My preference here is to stop saying four times around. That would be really good if it wasn't fading, if it was drawing instead of fading. You know, my preference is to get back to that at least to like level par. That would be great. Anything below that is, you know, yay me. I don't expect it. Let's just work on the level par stuff. But to have that kind of against me, working against me, it's just annoying. It's just like that little thorn in your side.
Just kind of hangs there, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's super dumb.
It's golf.
There is one more thing I wanted to talk about.
Ugh.
And we're hanging out pretty much at the end of the episode, and I do want to force you to ask me questions because I always do. But I want to tell you, I played two nine holes with my wife and my kid this past weekend.
Uh-huh.
It was awesome. Dude, it was so much fun. I know there are guys listening out there who play, have kids or have siblings or parents they've played with. You really, truly don't know what it means to a father to watch a kid succeed out there.
Oh, yeah.
So my guy went to a golf camp a couple weeks ago, my little Calvin, and I'm full on gloating right now. Like, this is total dad mode. So he found like this legit swing. He's got, you watched.
Oh yeah. I got to see it today. I got to see it today.
So we step up and we get him hitting from these family tees. Right. And third hole of my golf course, the par three challenging, it's over a creek. And he's like, I don't want to do it. I don't want to lose my golf ball. I don't want to hit in the water. We're like, buddy, just hit it. So he hits this screaming drive over top of the creek onto the green, rolls all the way up to about a foot and a half away from the cup. And my dad's watching this, my wife's watching this, and I'm watching this. She's like, that thing is going in the freaking hole. Oh my God. And it didn't. And he three putted, which thank God, because dad made a par and he's not ready to lose to his kid. But by the way, most golf thing ever to three putt for a kid to do that.
Of course.
But man, what a feeling. You've got three young ones at home.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of like, your boy is doing the Fisher Price stuff, the little Tyke stuff.
Yeah.
How excited are you for him to get involved in this experience with you?
It's been interesting because, I mean, my three they're all so different from each other. So, like, I'm a big, I don't know if it's because I coach the game and I do everything with it and I've coached football and everything else all my life. Like, I don't push them towards anything. Like, Charlotte was going to go to golf camp this year with one of my former golfers who's now running camps and doing stuff like that. And then she's like, I don't think I'm ready yet. I'm like, that's okay. That's okay. But they'll go out with me in the yard and they'll swing a club and they'll mess around and they know what dad does.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that underlying interest and we're close. I mean, my wife is with all the free time she has in the job that she does. That's what she's like. She's like, I want to start golfing again.
That's awesome.
She played in high school. So she wants to do all those things and go and do everything with it. But it's good. It's fun. I think it's like seeing Calvin out there today was hilarious because like he's bombing them from the front step out into the street and trying to hit them over your head.
Yeah.
Which was, it was awesome. He's got to move. And Oliver's the same way. Like I watched Oliver one day swing and hit this plastic golf ball. He has this like high, beautiful finish like on TV because he pays attention whenever I'm watching golf. And I'm like, who are you?
He's going to start spinning the club.
Thanks, JT. I appreciate you teaching him that. But no, that's not my swing. But it's something else. Like to be able to go out and to be on a golf course and have people around you, even if it's not the thing that they just eat up like you do, but they understand how much you like it. And then everybody just has a good time and it's outside and it's unplugged for the most part. And it's people being around each other. It's good. I'm a fan. I'm really excited for the next year or so with my kids. Cause I think that's when that's really going to start to take hold. And I mean, yes, I hope they're hopeless addicts like I am. Like I've done nothing
golfers.
So far. They all swing right-handed, which is good for me as a, you know, so far, but it was like getting to talk to you about that. Like you can see the excitement and how special that is.
Yeah.
So that's the beauty of this game. How many times have I been on here and we've talked about that? Like, it's the things like that in this game that are just it's different than everything else. I can't take my kids out and play like tackle football with them.
We talked. No kidding. And I'm not, my kid's not playing hockey. He doesn't need the number of concussions right. I got. Forget that. It's fun. We can do this on another show talking about how much easier it is to parent a kid on a golf course than it is in the house, and the amount of things that you learn and improve on and experience like that with your kids. I'd love to hear from our listeners, the folks out there who have kids and are enjoying that sort of aspect of teaching their family there, and especially just spending time together. I mean, it's just an awesome thing, and I can't wait to do it again. And I said that about six times in the cart with him. I'm like, why don't we do this like every day? Because it's awesome. So yeah, man, I can't wait to hear how your kids take to it. And obviously we're getting to the point in our lives where it's no longer a dad's trip. It's now like, let's take the family.
It's a family trip thing. Yeah.
They can either go away or come with us when we go golfing, because we're going golfing. So, so yeah, we're at the end of the show, man. Do you have questions for me?
I don't have anything this week.
No?
No.
Really?
It's because I've been around you too much the last 2 days.
Oh, man. At least I don't own a stick anymore, so you can drive tomorrow.
That's fact. Yeah.
Tomorrow, yeah. Yesterday, depending on whether you're listening or participating. Oh,
now we're like the flux capacitor. Man, I'm kind of disappointed. Possible. No, I don't. I mean, I've got to see the golf game up close.
Yeah.
Like, you're a liar.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
I got to see Cal,
yeah,
which was awesome.
Yeah.
Finally.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's get you back on soon. You better bring a couple good ones with you next time.
I'll start doing homework.
Okay.
Yeah.
Again, for those out there who have stuck around this long, James is a fantastic writer. He does equipment reviews on THP's homepage. You can see him on his Twitter as well, at JMN_THP. Make sure you do follow us at OffCourseTHP and myself at CanadaanGolf. I'm pretty sure that's my handle. If you are playing this weekend, I hope you have an absolutely awesome time. Connect with the buddies who we haven't played with in a while. So let's get out there and play. I know it's been an unbelievable experience for me. James, I appreciate you, man.
Thanks, man. Anytime.
Yeah. Hey, have fun. We'll see you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.